Welcome, everybody. Welcome to episode 6, all about soy. So if you're back here listening to episode 6, I am going to make an assumption that you've liked episode 1 to 5. And if you liked episode 1 to 5, I really think you're going to thoroughly enjoy episode 6, because today we have a special guest, and this guest happens to be a founding father in the vegetable wax industry. And we're very pleased that he's here, and we have a bunch of questions that we could ask him and a lot of things to learn. So tonight's a special event, and if you're, or today, or podcast time, like I'm
podcast world, anytime, podcast any place. World.
Yeah. So we have Tom with us tonight, and we're going to ask him a bunch of stuff, and hopefully we'll learn and answer some of the questions you have about vegetable waxes, and off we go.
So we were talking ahead of the show here that we're, you know, Tom's been around for about 25 years. So we established between the three of us, we have 100 years of experience now if we were all one person. So Tom's been around for a while. He knows all the ins and outs of soy waxes, and we're hoping to answer a lot of the questions you may have and talk about some things that you might not even thought of. So, you know, basically, you know, the number one thing is soy is, I want to say the word new.
Before we even do that.
Sure, yeah.
Tom, welcome.
Well, welcome, Jamie. Thank you, guys.
We're really glad you can make it with us. Yeah, we're really glad we can make it with us. And really, I'm truly excited to have you here.
So one of the first things we like to cover is, you know, the kind of the genesis of soy waxes. They're not new, but they've only been around for, say, for candle waxes, Tom, about 20 years.
Yeah, 20, close to almost 25 now.
Right.
So some of the first waxes weren't really, soy waxes weren't really widely used or widely known. I know some people that started back in like the time frame around 95. It really didn't start to become mainstream until 98, 2000, in that time frame. You started having a lot of the larger candle manufacturers, and people noticed that it could be used as a wax. So that was kind of the time frame of when everything kind of got started, was around that time frame.
And what do you think became the starting point for saying, hey, let's develop a soybean into a wax to be used in candles? Was it being used in other industries that were similar?
So, yeah. So if you look at just even going back, so vegetable oil was originally designed for food applications. But if you look at specific food applications, one being confectionery, confectionery is basically the use of a wax to design essentially like a chocolate. So you're using, you know, cocoa butter, imitation cocoa butters. You're using some of the harder soy waxes to create, you know, as fillers and as hardeners for those softer cocoa butters and stuff like that, so that you could hold shapes and stuff like that. So confectionery has been around centuries now.
Right.
So a lot of that stuff has been used for quite a while. And that was a lot of the basis for a lot of people's research and development that did this, were people that had experience with confectionery.
Okay.
Well, so, I got started with soy back in like around 95. I think I was one of the first.
We were together back then working. Right,
exactly. And if I remember correctly, it was coming out of the Indiana Soybean Commission in Purdue University.
Yep.
Right. And that's more or less what I know as the start of soy waxes. How did they get involved with that to begin with? Do you know?
Kind of the same route that I did, by people asking about it, people wanting to use. And actually, if we step back, there's a good friend of mine that formulated soy, a lot of the, what is now considered the hybrid blends, the soy paraffin blends. He actually started that back in 91. Okay. He has a formula that goes back to 91 he was one of the very first to actually start formulating in it. it was interesting because we were selling them that their oil. And I kept trying to figure out what's the industrial use, what's he using it for? And, you know, later on, closer to 95, 96 is when I realized he was using it in wax. And so that got me interested in how could I use it in wax?
Right. That's pretty cool.
Well, those beginning, though, that beginning soy, oh, was that rough?
Yeah, talk about,
bloom, we would get frosting, we would get bloom, and nobody was understanding where it was coming from. Customers were saying this is ugly, and people were getting aggravated, and we kept trying temperatures, and we kept trying different glass temperatures, and we were supplied the wax, and no matter what we did, we got the most gorgeous blooms. Yeah. All over the place.
Right, right. I think we found in the beginning that paraffin went a long way, but obviously we were trying to keep it natural. And then we kind of stumbled on beeswax as a pretty good additive to prevent that bloom.
Right. And there are additives like beeswax. You know, and going back to what Jamie was saying about the blooming and stuff like that. You know, like I was saying, a lot of it, so we based it on confectionery. And that's where a lot of us started, was with that confectionery type formulations. The problem was, is those formulations, those confectionery formulations, you know, if you think about it, your confectionery is about the size of a tea light. And so cooling wasn't as much of an issue. Whereas with Jamie in a candle, in a jar candle, there's a lot of different coolings. And so it's that bloom would, like you said, would just come screaming out.
The more time to let it cool would introduce more blooming to it.
It's so with soy wax, it's very much, especially a lot of the traditional ones, so if you look at a lot of the traditional ones that are out of, and so a lot of those are still out on the market today because people love them. But a lot of those original ones, you had to cool them specifically. If you cooled it too fast, you would get fat bloom. If you cooled it too slow, you would get fat bloom. Mm-hmm. It had to follow a specific cooling curve.
Right.
And Jamie probably remembers even the cracking issues, because soy wax tends to be very brittle, and you need to be able to overcome that. And so, like you said, Joe, adding beeswax, adding those type of things can really improve it.
Talk about, you know, cracking and going crazy as far as cooling. Another time we were contract filling for the major retailer across the country, and they were just getting into soy. And again, what happened? We got bloom.
Yep.
They didn't love the idea of bloom. And I was working, and there were a couple of other contract packers working, and we started working together. We got to the point that we would fill candles under automatic machines and then put them directly into boxes to try and keep the heat in.
Yep.
All right. We would try so many different methods of cooling that it really was wild. And I can't tell you the amount of product that we wound up destroying because it was unsaleable, or was considered unsaleable because of the bloom. And it's so currently, the current times are just, we're past that part of the candle making history for the most part, but that was a royal pain.
Oh yeah. Those first, I'd even go so far as to say, you know, from 95 through even 2007, 2008 timeframe, there was a lot of growing pains with a lot of candle manufacturers.
Right.
I think I suffered all of them.
Don't get me wrong, JB. So did I.
Yeah, I know. That I know.
Now, could you just take us back a little bit into the kind of the the chemical makeup of a soy wax that causes this bloom? Is it down to that level?
It's not quite to that level. Soy is really, it has three crystal structures for the most part. Alpha, which essentially is you're never going to see it. It's going to melt before you ever see it. And then beta prime, which is that smooth appearance that everybody wants. The last one is beta. And unfortunately, soybean oil in and of itself wants to go to beta. And so if it's uncontrolled, so if you're just using a straight soy wax that has no additives in it at all, you're going to have fat bloom. Now, there are additives, you know, Jamie and I have talked about this many, 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 many times. There are a lot of additives out there. And you can get soy based, you can get palm based, you can get, you know, vegetable oil based, you can get petroleum based additives. There's all kinds of different additives out there that, well, Joe, you brought up beeswax, you know, so it does, there are ways to help control it. And that's what a lot of the formulators that are working for a lot of these companies have done in these days is started to formulate around different ways to be able to make to control that bloom in the candle.
Right. How do fragrances interact with soy waxes? Do they help for the most part to kind of fill in those gaps, or do they, you know, kind of work against it?
It really depends. I will be the first one to tell you, and the fragrance houses love to use this as a co-solvent and a surfactant. They love to use benzobenzoate.
Mm, yep.
But benzobenzoate within natural soy wax, if it isn't controlled properly, will cause you more grief than anything. It will actually bring out the fat bloom. It will actually, to the point you burn the top of the candle and you blow it out and let it cool, and it will look like cauliflower on top.
Just let me jump in for 1 second, guys. What Tom is talking about as far as the benzobenzoate and the fragrances, in our last episode, we were discussing what was called diluents. And the diluents is where a fragrance manufacturer would add all the active ingredients that make the smell, and they would add it into that diluent that would make it go into solution. The benzobenzoate that Tom is talking about is one of those diluents, one of those carriers that could be in the fragrance oil that you buy.
Correct.
Right.
And they'll usually use the term diluent or co-solvent surfactant. And it's those, the fragrances themselves don't tend to cause you a lot of problems. It's usually the diluents that are used. And so benzobenzoate, like I said, is probably the worst one out there, but it's also the most common. And so you just need to be aware of that when you're formulating with your fragrances.
Right.
And I know a lot of the distributors out there have already taken that into account. And a lot of the fragrance houses have as well. If you look at soy, from a throw standpoint, a lot of people will tell you it tends to lock it down, and it does. And there's a reason for it. If you take water as being absolute, very polar, and you put silicone at the other end, your paraffin tends to be up around like, 8 or 9. So it's getting close. If silicone is 10, it's getting close to that. If you look at soy tends to be closer to the range of 6 to 7. And if you look at your fragrances, they'll vary the ingredients that go in there. those fragrance components and the solvents will range over that range of, say, 3 up to 8. And so with soy sitting basically in that same range as a lot of the fragrances, they are very much alike. And so depending on what diluent they're using and stuff like that, the fragrant, the soy may not want to let go of it. In other cases where the diluent has been properly adjusted, it will allow the fragrance to come through. And that's why we really talk about testing your fragrances. I've listened to a number of your guys' shows, and one of the things you keep driving home is testing, and retesting.
Absolutely.
And that's really something that's got to be done, whether it's with wick, whether it's with the wax, whether it's fragrance, but testing all those components as one thing.
Right. We try to stress that the candle is a complete composition. It's not, nothing stands alone. Everything has to work together.
That's right.
And we talk about how the wick, you know, kind of gets the blame for everything, but there's a lot deeper into that that people should look at when they're testing their candles and knowing.
I won't agree with you completely on that one, Joe. The wax gets blamed an awful lot too. So,
well, of course, the wick people blame the wax people blame the fragrance, the fragrance people blame the wax, and the wax people blame the wick.
Round circle.
And at the end of the day, they all blame me, the candle maker.
Right, it's all your fault anyway. Because what'd you do wrong?
I showed up for work. Sometimes I have to question that.
So one thing that I hear a lot about is the toxicity of waxes in general. And, you know, even here, some people are putting down soy in a sense, but how would you compare the toxicity of waxes in general compared to soy when it comes to, you know, breathing it in the atmosphere, anything like that?
Really, with the waxes we're using in this day and age, you know, using fully refined, even scale wax and soy wax, and the palm waxes, all these products are very heavily refined and very heavily. And that's one thing that I did help and did support was the NCA doing, NCA National Candle Association doing testing on candles and looking for that toxicity and looking at the levels. And if you really looked at it, which I got the full report, and basically what it's stating is all the waxes, all the things that are given off, but you would literally have to take a room that's like 5 by 7, that's 8 feet tall, and you would have to be burning 15 candles in there, and you're just gonna hit the detectability levels of the things that people are worried about.
Yeah, you probably run out of oxygen before you hit a toxic level, right?
I mean, it's none of your waxes are really all that bad from a toxicity standpoint. That's one of the things that I firmly believe, that soy wax, paraffin wax, beeswax, we tested all of them. We tested palm. We tested palm fatty acids, which is a lot of people will classify as palm wax. And so those are the type of things you do need to be aware that they are very much the same. And they what they're giving off for the most part is not harmful.
That's good to hear you say that, because there's a lot of discussion about that out there, and there's a lot of claims out there too that, you know,
correct,
one is better than the other. But I'm coming from a paraffin background, and it's always been knocked to have, you know, different levels of toxicity to it. But I feel the same, that across the board, they've been refined so much to the point where all that's been refined out of it already.
You know, I was with a group of people from a major oil refinery last weekend. And we were discussing waxes, and we were discussing candles, because people sometimes get very enamored when they run into a candle maker and they go, oh, wow, somebody really does make candles. But anyway, so we're talking, and I said to them, I said, listen, to me, a paraffin wax is the most natural form of wax there is. It comes from dinosaurs. So how could you not consider a paraffin wax natural?
Right, right. And 100%.
So as we started talking about it, we also started talking about how paraffin, not to get off the subject of soy for a second, but how paraffin gets a bad rap as far as carbon footprint is concerned. And people do not really, or the public does not really understand the steps that the oil industries have taken to make the refining process that you were talking about greener and much more environmentally friendly.
Correct.
They've been on the forefront of trying to make their refineries the lowest carbon footprints they can. And they, in many ways, it seems that they've caught up to renewables, and you're much closer to it. Is that really the case? Or how do you look at that from a carbon footprint standpoint?
If you look at it from a carbon footprint standpoint, they are getting better. I would not say that they have brought it all the way to the level we are from a carbon footprint standpoint, but they have taken huge strides. And so that's one of the things that people need to be aware of is the paraffin industry has, and the petroleum industry in general has done great strides in trying to improve their carbon footprint, by recycling water and, reusing things and improving their processes to the point where it is much better than it used to be. And so it is, like I said, I don't know that they're quite as far along as we are, but if you also stop and consider when they plant the fields, they're going to plant the fields using diesel in their tractors. They're going to go out and they're going to harvest it. They're using diesel in their tractors. So there is still a carbon footprint for your vegetable oils. Even in the refineries, we're still using electricity. We're using water, but along the same lines as the petroleum guys, we do a lot of controlling our water, treating our water and recycling it back into the process so that we're also trying to reduce our carbon footprint. And so I think everybody's trying to do that, and it is getting better.
How does the soy business kind of look at sustainability versus renewable resources? Are they ahead of most other industries when it comes to that?
I would say soy is actually, because we've been doing it for the food industry, we'll take palm, for instance. Palm is very, very heavily used. It's the largest, the largest and widest used vegetable oil worldwide. But it has a very bad name out there because of the way it is harvested, the way they treat the people. And so companies that are out there that are the large food producers, vegetable oil producers, are going in and trying to control that. Even when you talk about soy, there's a soy down in South America, especially Brazil, where they're talking about people are going in and cutting down the rainforest to get more land for soy. The large companies are trying to stop that. They're not trying to. They don't want the farmers to go out and cut down the rainforest. The big difference is the United States did that back in the 1800s and early 1900s. And, my grandfather, that's how he made his living, was going out and tilling or laying tile to drain water sources throughout the state of Iowa. Now Iowa has actually gone backwards. They're going out and they're taking that tile out. They're going back and they're trying to re-put that land back to the natural state it was in. And so you're starting to see everybody, the farmers, everybody are wanting to reduce their carbon footprint, are trying to improve the environment.
And you do see candle manufacturers with palm, that there is responsibly sourced palm.
Correct. And that's my whole point, Jamie, is most of the palm that is out there is sourced responsibly.
And it is the candle maker's responsibility, I feel, to make sure that the palm oil that they are using can be traced.
Correct.
It happens to be an important thing. You know, we all want to be socially and environmentally conscious. And that's an easy way as a candle maker to make sure that the ingredients that you're using are responsibly sourced.
Correct.
Now, one thing we spoke about in our, just getting down to some practical applications here. One thing we spoke about, I think it was our first or second episode, we talk about curing time. How soon can you test burn a candle after you've poured it? I've heard stories from 2 weeks to 2 months when it comes to soy. Do you feel that there's a recommended curing time? I mean, paraffin, we talked about, you know, down to 24 hours, some different blends, just 24 hours. Do you feel that soy comes with a curing time before you start your test burning to have an accurate result?
So typically for me, I'm curing my candles. So if I poured them up this morning, I'll wait to test burn until tomorrow morning.
24 hours roughly.
And so roughly 24 hours is very typical.
But also Tom is not always looking for fragrance throw, right?
Correct. You can see some differences in your fragrance throw if you let it sit for longer. But typically I'm not seeing a big change, Jamie.
Good. Okay. And neither do I. And that's what we had spoken to before. But there is sort of a little change on the maturity side of certain fragrances as you move along.
Yeah. Yeah. So along the same lines, do you feel that, you know, we talked about wick selection being in, you know, something to look at, have a toolbox of different wick series. Do you find that, you know, by name or not by name, certain wick series work better with soys?
So typically, and Joe, you talked about this in that wick one, how the Stabilos, the Ecos, and the HCPs are all very similar. Typically, I do fairly well with those type of wicks. I've also tested a number of wicks that are from Wicked, from the premier wicks. I like a lot of those wicks. I typically stay away from the cord wicks because I don't tend to have real good luck with them. You know, so like the paper core, cotton cores usually aren't too bad, but the paper cord wicks, I typically don't have a lot of luck with them. But I do know people that do. And so it's really comes down to what you are looking for, how you want that candle to burn.
Right. Right.
It also depends on your blend too.
Correct.
Okay. If you're looking for very high veggie, is going to be different than if you're making a hybrid where you're using paraffin with a vegetable oil. So
correct.
You know, once you add the paraffin, it opens up a whole nother family of wicks.
Correct.
Tom just happens to do the hardest work, which is more or less staying almost 100% veggie and trying to make that burn nice.
Right. What are some of the other additives that, you know, our listeners can add to soys to help with that blooming or maybe help with the fragrance release when it comes to soys?
Fragrance release is kind of hard, and that's always been a touchy subject. But getting fragrance throw and improving that fragrance throw, really a candle. I do know there are there are a lot of discussions about adding coconut oil because it gives you a better fragrance throw. Because I test a lot of different fragrances and I test a lot of different waxes and stuff, I haven't really seen where coconut gizmatic oils that people are adding really help, other than in the case of some of the oils, if you are adding the liquid oil, and be extremely careful with that because it will want to migrate. You can cause other issues with it. But that's the whole point, is those oils will migrate through the crystal structures of the soy paraffin. So helping, that's where I think coconut would help you, is it will melt faster because it is lower melting. And so you can develop your melt pools quicker. You can get improved throw from those type of things. So the liquid, that those liquid fractions, even though coconut, it's, you know, at room temperature, it's pretty solid. It will want to migrate within the system. And so it's helping to bring the fragrance to the surface. And so that's the only way I could see where some of those other exotic oils or things could help.
Okay.
Have you seen burning issues with those? Because they're starting to get a little more oily through the wick.
Yes. So if you add a less hydrogenated oil, like a soybean oil or liquid oil, like apricot oil, those don't tend to burn quite as well as some of the, as the stuff that's been hardened, for the waxes. You know, a prime example I'll use, if you try and take just soybean oil and you put the standard wick in it, you know, take a bottle off the shelf at the grocery store, pour it into a 3-inch jar and put a large wick in it, it's going to self-extinguish. I'll guarantee it. I've done it. That's kind of where we are with that. But so yeah, I do see a lot of burn issues when I try and add other oils, especially straight oils.
Yeah.
It's a difficult thing to do. It's really hard to balance out.
All right.
Using things like fatty acids, like stearic acid, isosteric. Isosteric is another good one that will help to things migrate it through and keep things moving. So a lot of the fatty acids and stuff will actually help as well. And they do tend to burn better.
All right. So, I mean, we're learning a lot, and I understand. And believe me, I've lived it with everybody, knowing how the candle industry has gotten to this point with vegetable waxes. But I know that you keep doing a lot of exploration, a lot of research. What do you think is next? Where is the vegetable side of candle making heading?
That's a loaded question, Jamie.
You don't have to answer it if it's proprietary.
Well, so I know there's a lot of work being done by a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. Whether it's myself, whether it's, you know, these other organizations, the things that has to be done with soy wax, and some of it's going to take the help of the wick guys, in working with them, because, you know, one of the things that's always been a problem with soy wax is getting it to burn, especially with a single wick. And part of that reason is the viscosity of soy is so much higher than paraffin that it is hard to get it to wick up the wick. There's other issues like contact angle of the wick versus paraffin, of soy versus paraffin, but it needs to get to the point where you have very similar type or very similar type appearance of the wax to paraffin. It's got to get to that stage where it has that same functionality. And I think the other thing with that is, because where, you know, a model candle, a model paraffin candle is 100% paraffin. The additives that we have that are for the petroleum base, so like petrolatum, the microcrystallines, those type of waxes don't exist today on a vegetable oil side as such, that like a microcrystalline is, you know, has a extremely high melt, but is still very flexible. You can get those. So Joe, you had asked earlier about some of the things that you could get. So like adding, like I mentioned, fatty acids, the use of fatty acids, the use of monodiglycerides. So some of, to a certain extent, some of those things exist.
What are those in layman's terms? Something that the everyday person get their hands on.
They're not
So those are a little bit harder to get a hold of.
Yeah.
There are companies that do, a few distributors that do carry some of those things as additives, but they're a little bit harder to get. And that goes back to what I was saying about confectionery, and a lot of the people are already adding. So these manufacturers or formulators like myself are already adding them, a lot of those additives to a certain extent. But they tend to be expensive. And so it also drives the price of soy wax up.
Right. Sit
there. There's a balancing act.
And from a crafter's perspective, a lot of the products, the pre-blended products that distributors sell, all the hard work has been done for them.
Yep.
So they really need to just concentrate on, or first of all, thank you for a lot of your work, but they have to concentrate on the right temperatures, the repeatability of their process, watching their cooling, watching their pour temperatures. And what I mean by that is what we've said in the past, you know, try all different methods to see how it's working. But the issues of the waxes has already more or less been solved for them. And the tools available to the professional candle maker, especially the large ones, is going to be different. It's sort of, it's like the same in any other industry.
Correct.
Right. Just like we mentioned, having, you know, your wicks and your toolbox. I mean, there are so many different soy blends out there. Some you can create yourself, you know, through trial and error. You can test the ones that are available. You can blend some of those together to find a nice distribution. And, you know, if you look at as many soy waxes as possible to narrow down the one that works best in your formula.
And that is very true. Finding the right one that works for you is very critical, because each, just like in, you know, a paraffin is not a paraffin is not a paraffin. You get different paraffins, you can get different soy waxes. So each one is going to be different. And each one, you know, you may find one that works perfectly for you, but all the rest, even though they're very similar, may not function for you, for your particular environment.
Right.
And so testing them and evaluating them, you know, in my case, I've got 3, 4, 6, 7 that are on the market right now. And there's a number of them that are being sold. You know, each one has its own benefits and each one has its own side effects.
Right. Well, speaking of selling, you know, how would you compare pricing of soy to other waxes? You know, they have the coconut waxes, the apricot waxes out there, paraffin wax. You're kind of in the middle of the road.
If you look at soy compared to your other vegetable oils right now, your other vegetable waxes, especially because of what's happening over in Europe right now, that has really drove the price of soybean oil through the roof. And it is, makes it hard. And it's not just soybean oil. It's all vegetable oils right now are, so sunflower, canola, palm, rapeseed, all those oils, coconut, all of those are extremely expensive right now because of that. There's other things, because
it's obscenely.
yes. I'm well aware of it. I mean, cause I, even being on the technical side, I still hear it every day. These prices, but on the flip side of that, a lot of those same issues, paraffin prices are also going up, because that area also happens to be some of the largest producers of paraffin, especially for Europe. Soy prices are high right now. And whereas, I'm go back, 2 years, Jamie?
Yeah, it was reasonable.
Well, and you can, if you compared soy prices to paraffin prices, we were less.
Correct.
Right. Now we're running equivalent to slightly higher, I would say, for your vegetable waxes. Mm-hmm. And coconut's always going to be one of your more expensive. Apricot is going to be even more. So those specialty oils, because they are, there's not a lot of people, they're not heavily produced. So those specialty ones are always going to be much more expensive.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's a very weird time in the candle industry right now.
Yes.
You know, prices are escalating faster on a daily basis. I mean, I've been doing this many years and I've never seen anything like that.
Right.
You back up. I've got 30 plus years in the vegetable oil industry itself, and you back up, I have not seen this number for the crude soybean oil. I have not seen it this high in 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. This is it.
I wake up every morning. One of the things I'm watching is CNBC, and I'm watching that ticker on the commodities, and I'm watching soybean oil every day ticking up.
It has finally started coming back down slightly, but
that was for one day last week, and it re-ticked again.
Did it go back up?
Yeah,
it went back up. Yeah, I haven't seen it any this week. I've been traveling all week, so I hadn't seen it, what it's been doing. But yes, it's price of soy, and it is a commodity, so it does get traded, and so prices can fluctuate very quickly.
Yeah. All right. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on here, Tom, sharing your knowledge and your experience with our listeners. And Jamie, anything else you want to add or ask?
No. I really, again, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your knowledge. I appreciate all the help you've given me through the years. And I think you've helped a lot of people open up their eyes to there's a lot more involved in getting that product to the candle maker than just mixing two things in a jar and saying it's a wax.
Right. Actually, they get the benefit of all your years of experience in placing the order with their distributor and getting all their supplies together. They get the years of experience kind of handed to everybody on a platter. And all you got to do is figure out which works best for you. But, you know, again, I want to thank you for coming on. And we'll remind everybody that we're on Instagram, we're on TikTok, working on our Facebook page. There's a link in the description where you can send us questions. Look for our Instagram for upcoming episodes and information. Jamie, always have a good time. Tom, appreciate you guys coming on, talking to us.
Do we have a GoFundMe page?
GoFundMe page? No.
No, we don't? Can we look into a GoFundMe
page? We do have ads now in our podcast about halfway through. So please forgive us, but you know, we need to do that to sustain the channel.
If we had the GoFundMe page going, do we still have to do ads?
No, well, it all depends. We have 400 followers on Instagram now, so we're heading in the right direction.
Gotta love it.
All right, guys.
Thank you, gentlemen, for allowing me to come on and talk.
You got it.
Thanks again.
Take care.